Yeah, man. Mm-hmm. One dude told people, like, mind you, this dude's like a project manager or something, but he was trying to tell people to get into cybersecurity, to go get a CISSP, Google IT support professional, and I think he said AWS cloud practitioner. And I was like, that could be further from the truth, because CISSP is an even entry level, and you need a certain amount of experience in a couple of the domains before you can even take it. Like, and that's the thing they won't tell nobody. Endorsement,
right? Right. You need to get endorsed for that. And if you don't have nobody to endorse it, you're not getting
it. All right, man. So I see you got the pictures and stuff in the background. Put you on the spot right here.
Right.
Let's say top, top three or top five animes.
Oh, top three. I think top three will probably be the easiest. So my first one is Initial D. So that's one of like the racing animes back in the 90s. Okay. About some kid who his name is Takumi, who his father raised him to be a professional drifter by delivering tofu in the middle of the night while he was in high school, and then he turns out to like battle all these cars and all these different people across Japan. The second one, it's a tough one because I'm torn between Naruto and Tokyo Ghoul, but I would have to go with Naruto because it's my childhood. And then the third one would definitely have to be Kill la Kill. And Kill la Kill is it's on the perverted side, but at the same time, it's also a very good anime.
I mean, what anime doesn't have those? No,
yeah, that's true. That's true. That's true. What the majority of them do. So,
and yeah, I think for me, mine are like Naruto, Yu Yu Hakusho, and for me, I like I don't like stuff to be predictable. So. My last one that I really was a fan of, and I was, it was only because I caught up with the manga that I really hadn't watched the anime, was Seven Deadly Sins. Like, some of the stuff that happened, I couldn't like point out, so that's what I like. Yeah. I mean, if I was keeping up with Black Clover, I would say also, you know, Black Clover, because some of the stuff that they're doing isn't, you know, predictable. But I mean, it's a lot of good ones out there. Like the short ones, like I brought up, Akame Got Killed when we got on the call, and Kenichi. I like Kenichi, the Mice Disciple. That's a real.
I haven't seen that one.
It's a real good short one. Like it's pretty good. What's another short one? Because I used to give people short animes to at least watch some short to see if they actually like them. K for King or whatever it's called. You know what I'm talking about? It was like on Hulu. K for King. And,
yeah, I did see that one. I did see that one. Yeah. There's another one. That is a short one. I think it's like what, 12 episodes. It's called Real Life, and it's actually a really good one.
I haven't seen it at all. The game, the one I've been waiting for, the anime to drop again is what's the one where the guy is in a video game and it's a Shield Hero, right? Shield Hero was pretty good.
Shield Hero.
Shield Hero.
Oh yeah, I've heard of that one.
Yeah, Fire Force. Seraph for the End is good too.
Which one?
Seraph of the End.
I've never heard of that one. What's it about?
They turn into, is it vampires or something? I can't remember what happens. I don't know. And then I forgot, and people gonna be like, if they see the beginning of this looking like, they're gonna give me in the comments. Guys, DBZ doesn't count because it's legendary. Really, I didn't have to throw Naruto in there. I should have just took Naruto and One Piece off and let them be to their own thing. And then I should have probably, you know, but then you start getting to, oh, Hunter Hunter and everything else that everybody likes, you know. You know, I could have said, hey, Ultimate Muscle, Fighting Futons, Pokemon, Digimon. It's a whole bunch of different crap that, you know, watched through childhood as just.
Yeah.
Beyblade really is one of my favorite ones, honestly. That's why I should have said Beyblade. The first three seasons, though. Everything else classic. I haven't watched.
Yeah.
And I had, this was probably the one time, like, and my cousins, I wasn't the leader, but my favorite Beyblade was Dragoon. So I had like most of all the Dragoons through all the seasons. I had like every Dragoon, the G-Force one, the metal, the metal system they had. Now, I never think I had the cool launchers, but I had the Bay Stadium. And then my other cousin, one of my cousins, he liked Kai, and the other one liked Drasil. Now, we didn't have a fourth person to be like having Drigger, so we didn't have that. But my younger cousin was like 4 years younger than me, and he used to try to compete with me a lot. So it was a, I think one Christmas me and him had the same Beyblade, so we kind of fought it out to see who would be the main character, and he was Daichi.
Yeah. Man, that's, you are taking me back, man. That has been a while since I even seen it. Or even, you know, play with the figures that they came out with. That also brings me back. I don't know if you remember like the little eggs they used to have called Tamagotchis.
Mm-hmm. I remember all those.
That's taking me back, because I know a friend of mine, I was in high school, it was like in the early 2010s, and they still were playing him. And he had his straight from Japan, like imported, and he would just play on them in class. I didn't have any of those, but yeah, man, it's so many different, like, Japanese culture, honestly, anime culture is something that you really can't, you just got to get invested into it to really understand what it's like.
Yeah, and we'll probably touch on that some more. Yeah. But ladies and gentlemen, this is Damian Burks, and he is let me look at this real quick, don't mess it up. He's a cloud security engineer. So I'll actually let him briefly introduce himself, and then we'll get on with this podcast episode.
Okay, cool. So I'm Damian Burks, everybody. I'm currently a cloud security engineer, or VP of cloud security engineering at Citibank. Over the past, 2-3 years, actually prior to this, I was working as a security software engineer for Verizon. And through that time, I learned a lot about developing tools and whatnot for security professionals or hackers to be able to like use to iterate over networks and stuff like that. And also to protect the company's assets and interests. On top of that, I would say like on the side, I do a lot of open source development. So I have a project that I just presented at DevOps Days Dallas called DataCop. And it's an AWS framework. It basically, if you, let's say you upload in a bucket or a file to an S3 bucket, it'll parse through that file and determine like what type of data is in that file. And if it's a risk to the business, it'll go ahead and block the entire bucket. And I'm also an AWS community builder on the side as well. With the free time that I have, which so little of it, I like to watch anime. I like to play video games. And I also like to go out to car meets and spend time with my cats. So yeah, that's a little bit nice. About me.
Yeah, it's kind of loaded. I got to ask you, like, the car meets thing, you know, it's probably the first I've had on the show about car meets. So you must have like, you know, a nice car. You
know? Oh, yeah, I have. I wouldn't necessarily say it's nice, but it's a little something. I have a Subaru WRX.
Okay.
I haven't tuned it or anything. It's still stock. The only thing is it does make a little bit of noise. It has a little rumble to it, and also put some wheels on it recently. So okay. Silver with all black rims.
Do you race it?
Yeah. I haven't gotten around to it yet. I want to, but I've just been so busy. I haven't been able to go to race wars and actually like participate in like going on a track and drag racing it yet. But that's on my to-do list. So
that's cool, because when you said make a little noise, that reminds me. That's like every day, like I'll be with my little cars I used to have, and like one of my first car that I actually bought and purchased for myself was a 2015 Mustang GT.
Oh.
And I used to love that car. But when I moved out here, and started staying with my aunt. And so she stayed in Little M, and then my job was like in Addison. So when I first moved out here, I didn't know. Like, I used to take 380 all the way to 75, like, to go to work. I didn't know that, hey, you could just go down the tollway or you can go down Coit or Preston and get there faster. So I used to like waste a lot of gas. But even going down like the tollway and stuff, like the starting and stopping throughout the city would just kill the gas. Mm-hmm. And my insurance was sky high just because at the time, see, I got that vehicle when I was 22? Yeah, like 22 years old.
Yeah.
And so even though I had never had no wrecks or anything, I had already had a license for like 5 years. They was like, nope, you know, you're probably prone to cut up. And then I'm trying to see, did they start getting insured in Texas or not? But like they were just charging me too much. And that's when I went ahead and got the Maxima. I think I had like a Maxima XR, a 2017 black Maxima, Nissan Maxima XR. I used to love that car. But yeah, it got stolen.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it got stolen like 2 years ago. right after LSU won a national championship. And now I got a Honda Accord, but I think I'm going to get out of that eventually for something a little bit more family friendly, but yet sporty enough to be like me driving it. So,
yeah, I mean, the one thing I would like to say, like the Maxima, to be honest with you, that 2017 that you had, I think they put the 350Z engine into it. So it was super fast, man.
It was like, fast. You know, they're actually killing it off. Like this was the last year. Well, they're not killing them. Most of the car makers are not necessarily killing them off. They're just not going to make them, and they're probably going to bring everything back as like an EV alternative. That's probably what they're going to do.
Pretty much. But you know, nobody's going to want the EV if it doesn't make any noise or it doesn't give you that, you know?
Right. Like, but I've seen some nice EVs out there, though, man. Like, I've seen, what's that, that Ford Lightning, whatever that EV is. It got a cooler in it. It got a desk you can work from, like, in your car. Like, they're really getting creative since they don't have to use, like, they can, you know, utilize the space for different things since it doesn't have to have like, you know, auto motorized parts and stuff like that.
Yeah, that is true. I know Dodge had a Charger Concept that was an EV that looked really cool. But people were talking about from a cybersecurity standpoint about, you know, like it being electronic and, you know, hacking into the cars. Like when if everything's going electrical, how will they be able to protect it? So. That does bring a good point.
And I'll actually answer a little bit of that. I was actually interested in a company that is owned by Toyota who's working on stuff like that. They already have like a community of smart cities. I actually will probably show you offline. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Especially with the name, what the name of the smart city is. And they're working on software like for like all these autonomous vehicles and like, you know, electric vehicles and how, you know, how can they push through patches and updates to these cars? Because we know that's going to be that and IoT is going to be one of the next threat vectors. And probably one of my next episodes is going to be on, if I'm not mistaken, Ring had a security incident this week. So people had like hackers and stuff talking through their doorbells for Ring because, you know, I guess their systems got compromised. So I guess we'll be updated on that sometime this week or the next couple of weeks. You know, they wait a while to let us know what's really happening. But that's dope, man. So since you already told us who you was, let's talk about the beginning. Like, background as far as like schooling, whether you went to college or not, and kind of, you know, what made you, what was your passion, you know, to like choose something that's technological?
Oh man, okay, so a long-winded story, but we got time,
that's what this for.
Okay, yeah, look, so I'll just start. So I'm because I gave you guys a shorter version of like my background, but so first thing is that I'll began coding when I was 12. And when I was 12, I was going to this high school called Jersey Village. It was in Houston. That's pretty much where I grew up at. And I was exposed to learning programming in Java. Nice. So I took like CS1, computer science AP, and so on and so forth. And during that time while I was coding, I really wanted to learn how to make video games. And I was on that path. I was on that path to becoming a video game developer because I wanted to work for Rockstar and make the next GTA or work for EA and make the next Need for Speed, right? Mm-hmm. So fast forward, once I got out of high school, I was pretty skilled in writing Java development programs. And I also built my own Assassin's Creed-themed Hangman game in C# in 11th grade. So I got to college and I graduated in 2018 with a bachelor's in computer science from the Texas Southern University. So HBCU all the way. And during that time, I actually had a revelation, really. So I met this guy. His name was Amin. And he and I started. He actually was in the military at the time and he was interested in cybersecurity. That is one of the, you know, when you meet someone who's interested in cybersecurity and they ask you, hey, do you want to learn how to hack something? And my first mind was, is that even legal? And he was like, it's legal to a certain degree. You know, there's a thin line between unethical and ethical hacking. And I'm just like, okay, you know what? Let me see what you're talking about. Show me a little something. So he ended up showing me a little bit about hacking. So we hacked into the school printers and we got, we talked to our advisor and our professors, and we got clearance to do so. And he showed me how to do it and, you know, tap into the network and so on and so forth. And I, all of a sudden, it sparked the interest in my mind, and I became super interested. And I was like, you know what? This is actually really cool. Let me see if I can go down this path. So one thing led to another. I had a couple of internships working as an IT specialist and then as a desktop support engineer, because I wanted to learn the fundamentals. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, when you get into cybersecurity, it's always important to know how computers communicate, how servers communicate, network protocol. So I started from the very beginning and then worked my way up. So I got to college, about to finish, and I landed this internship as a DevSecOps engineer at Verizon, because part of me didn't want to necessarily neglect coding, but the other part didn't also want to neglect cybersecurity. So mm-hmm. I was like at a crossroads. I didn't know which path to go down until I found this path. And I kind of got that opportunity there to build some cool stuff in Docker and Kubernetes and secure CI/CD pipelines and stuff like that, whilst all coding at the same time. So that's pretty much how I ended up in this position where I am today. I got my first opportunity through Verizon, graduated, and then started my career. And overall, yeah, I've always been passionate about technology. And it all started with video games. And then one thing led to another. And now I'm here. Plus, on top of that, at the time, I actually figured out that video game developers didn't really get paid as well. So I didn't want to be the person, you know, sleeping underneath my desk, working 50 hours a week for little to nothing. So I was like, yeah, never mind.
Yeah, that sounds like me when I found out about, you know, most architects when they start out. Like, I went to school to want to be an architect. And I was looking at their starting salary. I was like, man, these dudes be sleeping the freaking hell hall all the time doing projects. I'm not going to be wasting my time doing that in college just to be making what somebody, you know, who didn't have to do half as much work in the college of business, you know, doing. Like, no way, I'm not going to do that. And I'm pretty sure maybe some architects, well, yeah, but, you know, once you start off, I say that's fine. Plus, I wasn't actually scared at it. So I'm smart enough to know. Like, you know, through your career, you find out, you know, you know what you know and you know what you don't know.
Right.
And it's pretty cool. That, and I mean, I guess, what can you tell us about your last role at a high level? You don't have to get intricate, but like, how was that first corporate job, and were you working in the Irving location?
Yeah, I was here based out of Irving. So I was based out of Dallas.
Okay. So did you start there like right before COVID or?
Yeah. So I actually graduated in 2018 of December, and then I started working at Verizon shortly after. So I only had a month off. So I worked January 2019. So I think COVID hit in 2020, I think.
Yeah.
Great start to the, you know, the new decade. But yeah, that's pretty much where I started working in with the time frame. So at a high level, so I basically, when I was there, security software engineer, I basically developed tools. So I was a tool developer for Verizon. Mm-hmm. And there were some tools that I developed. One of them, for example, was a DLP solution, custom DLP solution that we developed that we won an award for, CISO 50. And then a couple of other ones that I did. So a lot of my, you know, at a high level, what I did at Verizon was software development for security engineers and application security engineers and whatnot to help them be able to triage events and so on and so forth. So kind of the person in the middle, like, you know, if, for example, like, let's say if you have this system that you use to manage incidents and you want to be able to, from that one system and that dashboard, manage your incident and communicate with your employees or people who are a part of that incident all throughout that dashboard, that was basically something that I would have to do. So I was pretty much developing that for them, making their jobs easier. So yeah, nothing but tools.
Nice. And you know, if this is TMI, so that was, you said, pretty much security software developer, right?
Right.
If this isn't TMI, if there's a person out there listening to this right now, watching this, that wanted to do a role like that, like coming out of school, or is interested in doing that, I guess two things. Do they necessarily need to go to school, or maybe what type of skill sets do they need to know to do that role? And also, and granted, we all know this is subjective based on location, company, skill set, how you interview, et cetera, et cetera. But given like a type of range, what would be like a salary that they could possibly expect, you know, doing something like that? Because oftentimes in these interviews, I forget to ask that to my guests because I know the people want to know. Not in a sense to be nosy, but it's like, okay, well, you tell me about all this fun stuff, but I want to know the important stuff. How much I get paid?
right, exactly. So the first part of that question is, do they need to go to school and get licensed or get any type of skill sets? So I would say you don't necessarily have to go to school to become a developer. But it is always, I'm an advocate of education, so I always say definitely go get your degree, because in the end, it'll definitely help open doors and you'll meet that HR compliance checkbox. Mm-hmm. If I were to tell you what type of degree to get, it definitely would be something in computer science or in management information systems. Those are definitely the two that will help, because you get that foundational knowledge of how to code, right? You know, object-oriented programming and, you know, big old notation, runtime and stuff like that. You definitely still need to understand that if you want to be a software developer. But from a security perspective, that's when we start getting into more or less the certifications, right? You do need to know, have at least the fundamental knowledge of security. So the key certification I always push when I tell people, definitely get that Security Plus, because it covers everything that you need from, you know, the very beginning of security, how it all came about, the history behind it, the attack vectors that you may see, like rainbow tables and, you know, so on and so forth. And it also gives you the other side of security, which is more or less like the political side, how to convey those messages and talk security to security professionals and what so on and so forth. So I think that is the route that I'll say. They definitely need to be skilled, get that education. But if you don't want to, you can always teach yourself how to develop and code, but you definitely need to get certified for the security side of things. And
no, you good.
I was going to say, and the follow-up question, what type of salary would you ask for? I would say this, the expectation behind it, given the fact that you're doing two jobs at once, don't shoot for no more than under six figures. And the reason why is because when we think about it, back then I started out, I would say between 70 to 80 range when I first started. That was in 2018. We're in 2022, almost 2023. Right now, that bar should be up pretty high. Right. And the reason why is because of inflation and stuff like that. So I would say you should expect between 90 to 120. Make that like your average, especially when you're working for a sizable company, especially as Fortune 50 or higher, right? Make that your average, but always shoot for the higher number.
Right. Definitely.
For the higher number.
Yeah, man. It's funny because I might make a TikTok out of it, but I literally tweeted today. It was like, if a recruiter messages you on LinkedIn and the job description talk about, you know, above average pay, but when you ask them, hey, what is the pay? And they keep on trying to hop on a call with you, that's a red flag.
Yes.
I'm like, I shouldn't have to hop on a call with you to answer such a simple question. Like some recruiters, like you got the good ones that'll tell you right off the bat. And you got the ones that's trying to waste your time. Like I shared this thing on my Instagram about a recruiter reached out to me for a role. He never sent the job description, and I just kept on asking. I think I asked the range, but then they were trying to talk to me. But then one of the days they were talking to me, I had something to do. I had a meeting, and I think that was like that on a Thursday. And then on that Monday or something, they said something back, but I had something to do that day. And then he was like, oh, I feel like I'm doing all the work here and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, bruh. It's not the serious. Right. I talked to you the other day. You the one that didn't get back to me talking about it's so hard to call you from the UK or whatever. I'm like, stuff is not... It's not that hard, but I ended up just not even want to waste my time with that guy because he was getting on my nerves. And then I went to their page. I didn't like they call themselves a transatlantic headhunter, and I didn't like that. Mm. I was like, you could just say international, but I didn't like transatlantic. So I was like, and to be honest, sometimes it's I don't really use LinkedIn or Dice or anything like that. I mean, I use LinkedIn. I don't use Indeed or Dice like that, really.
Yeah.
But I know for the newbies out there, they're easier to get duped because you can't really verify if somebody actually a recruiter or not. So it's possible they could be faking like a recruiter, took the job, requisition, make their fake, website and get your information like that. I need to do some in-depth research on that and really bring some awareness to that, because that's how I felt sometimes in the past when I've wanted to be represented by some contractor companies, and I never heard nothing back after talking to them about there's different things and stuff I can do. Like one time I had to do this assessment, how would you respond to an IR plan? And I sent them some detail and I didn't really never hear nothing back. I was like, I'm never wasting my time, child, again. Like, if you need me to do something like that, forget it.
Yeah. I mean, it's so many. I know a friend who also got scammed once, and it was quite depressing, actually, because, when you go through something like that and you think people are, legit, especially when they have these websites, you're playing with someone's career and you're playing with someone's time. Like, you could have used that time to go and apply to other organizations that are actually legit, and coming up with these fake, these requirements and whatnot. My thing is, why do people find the time, and how do they find the time to even do this?
Tell me about it. So you do, but how long do you stay at that role? You stay there like a year or so?
So I stayed there for about 2.5 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let me see. There we go. Sorry. I had to get my color right. I knew I was missing something in the shot. What made you want to pivot into the cloud? That's probably a good portion of this. What caught your eye? What kind of sparked your eye? Did you see hey, cloud technology is the future. It's more interesting to me. It's a lot of unknowns about it. I just let you talk now.
That's a good question. So let me say, I'm gonna say this. When I first started, I was DevOps. DevSecOps was the only thing I wanted to do. I didn't care if it was on-prem or in the cloud.
Before you keep on going, can you break down? Because I actually want to know myself, so this is actually good.
Yeah.
DevOps and DevSecOps. What is it?
Okay, so this is how I envision it. I spoke about this a few years back to kind of explain the differences between the two. So you have DevOps, which is more focused on the operations side of things. That means building, testing, deploying your code. So they pretty much automate that entire SDLC, software development lifecycle. So when, let's say, from the very beginning, you draft the requirements to the building portion, when they start developing the web app or application, they move over to the operation side. Now, at that point, when you get to the point where you need to start deploying things, back in the day when it first started, before DevOps even existed, everything was very manual. You had to go through change management processes, and you had to figure out where things need to be deployed. You have to have all these configuration management systems in place, and so on and so forth. It's just a lot of things have been simplified with DevOps. So DevOps is pretty much the automation of the SDLC and the deployment phase of that SDLC, really. So the sec portion of DevSecOps is actually the integration of security into the DevOps processes. And the reason why DevSecOps came about was because people were deploying things and they were automating these cycles, but they were forgetting about security. Security was non-existent. So the sec portion of it is actually integrating the security into the automation of the overall SDLC. So now, instead of it go from code, build, test, deploy, we have now build, verify, which means that we are doing security analysis and scanning in this portion. Then we go into testing and then deploying. So it's basically that intersection. After you build a feature, let's go ahead and let's analyze it. Let's send it to security. Let's look at it. If it's good, deploy it and move on. Continue with your day. So that's pretty much at a high level what the difference between DevOps and DevSecOps.
Gotcha. Yeah, I got a friend. She does DevOps now, and she's been trying to pivot more so on security. And I was telling her, they say, hey, don't forget DevSecOps now. I mean, you technically got the other skills, and you got the security skills too for like all the projects she's been working on her own, you know, to ramp up her security portion of her skills. So I told her, like, you know, don't forget the sec part in the DevOps. But cool. I'm glad you explained it to us. I know that'd be helpful for the listeners. Now we'll transition that into maybe I probably think I know why you want to go into cloud, but I'll let you tell us right now.
So me going into cloud was kind of like, you know, there's this field that's really popular right now, and that seems like what most people are expecting out of DevSecOps engineers nowadays, because everything's deployed in the cloud. It just kind of transitioned into it. And then I fell in love with it. I primarily work in AWS now, but prior to that, I actually was interested into getting into cloud, but not at a pace at which I was when I first got my first certification, which was the Certified Developer Associate, AWS Certified Developer Associate. Once I got that and I realized how cool AWS is and how nice the services are, how you can easily develop things and you can deploy everything into the cloud and manage everything in one centralized location, I say, you know what? This is definitely a winner for me. And that's when I made that transition. So that's pretty much how I got into the cloud, is really more or less I found the interest and then that kind of just grew on me. And then I ended up having to permanently segue into it because that's pretty much where the job market was going anyway. Everybody's going into the cloud, you might as well say. And even from a security standpoint, I know a lot of security engineers and incident response professionals who are getting certified in AWS or a cloud provider, because that's where the majority of everyone's infrastructure is nowadays, and they have to know how to navigate through those services now.
Yeah, I definitely would agree. Like, I know when I was still at the SOC, like, I mean, I have two foundational level cloud certs, just the AZ-900 and the cloud practitioner. But even going through those, you get to see a lot of different services in AWS, in Azure. And then you can also, like, I tell people now, like, who are trying to get in, like, they really don't have an excuse because, well, you're a little younger than me, but when I was coming up, this didn't exist. So some people actually have to go buy equipment and get experience that way. With the cloud, that's changed everything. You can spin up your VMs and set up, you know, different networks inside the cloud, and you can do a whole bunch of stuff. I mean, it might cost you though, because that's why I turned all my stuff down from Azure. I forgot to set up billing, and got charged for, you know, leaving like one of our Logic apps on. But the fact that you can, you know, actually do something like that, like your own home lab that's in the cloud, and actually break it, and you know, with, you know, minimal effect to your actual, you know, network at your home, you know, it's perfect. But it's why. No, go ahead.
I was going to say just one thing, and that's also one of the big things that a lot of people forget is that, you know, when we were, let's say, like, when before the cloud existed, you had to go and you had to go buy your own servers and you had to go and buy your own routers and switches. Mm-hmm. Because everything is so abstract nowadays and the layers of abstraction just keep getting bigger, people don't necessarily know what's going on underneath the hood. So they don't know. For example, like you just mentioned, you got your home lab, right? And in that home lab, you got a couple of routers and a couple of switches. And if you make any changes to those in the cloud, let's say if you make changes to anything in the instances, it won't necessarily break your entire lab, but you don't necessarily get the foundational knowledge that you need to know, like, oh, well, if I tear down this switch, right, I just might break.
Now, if you guys are familiar with social media, most of the talk we see about is how to get into cybersecurity, how to get into tech. So a lot of entry-level content. Well, if you aren't entry-level anymore, then I have the course for you. I partner with LinkedIn Learning to give you guys a course on how to advance your cybersecurity career. This course is a short course dedicated to show you things that I learned in my personal career journey that helped me go from being a help desk all the way to being a senior VP in a financial institution. So if you're ready to advance your career, then check out my LinkedIn Learning course. Link will be in the description. Thank you. Been for a while now, I'm at JP Morgan. And both of them had their, you know, strengths between like technology wise. But for me, I'm really tired of VDIs. Like, do y'all use a VDI too?
Yeah.
Like, I understand the reasoning behind it, but I want this to be my machine, not my work machine. Like, I want my own work machine. I'm tired of doing work on my own machine. Mm-hmm. That's one thing. But I understand, you know, about how, okay, it could be a little bit more, you know, secure and they can monitor things better. But, you know, insider threat still gets the best of a lot of companies, even if you are using the VDI. So it's not, you know, nothing is foolproof.
Yeah.
But as I was talking earlier, when you brought up your point about under the hood and people don't need to know that, I was replying to someone in my comment section like a day or so ago, and I was explaining to him why like getting the Cloud Plus was a waste of time. I was like, choose one of the three vendors and just go from there and learn what you can so you could possibly specialize in one. And I was telling him, it's like loosely, most of them pretty much do all the same things. They just have like slightly different things to the services and names. But I was telling him, I say, I don't see Cloud Plus on job descriptions. I see it talking about, you know, AWS certs or Azure certifications or GCP. I don't see it talking about Cloud Plus. So I was like, I would just, you know, advise you like not to waste your time on that. Just more so get more familiar with one of the vendors. And, you know, you could, like you said, like you found out all the services. That's why I tell people like, hey, if you have no knowledge of it, like, hey, like I don't recommend A+ no more. I say, hey, you know, go get a cloud cert, like one of the entry level ones, because it's going to introduce you to all the different services. And you might say, I like this. Let me look into networking. Or you might like when they're talking about like all the different database stuff you can do at AWS. So you might want to go that route. Like that's what it's really for, to introduce you. It's not to say, oh, now you get the cert and you're finna go get like a whole bunch of money. Cause that's the other thing that the people get people to buy into when they do these lists. Oh, these certs make all this money. I was like, they're leaving out a lot of details in there. It's like mostly people who have these certifications have experience. They didn't just go get this cert and then somebody, you know, gave them the Brinks truck the next day to their front door.
That's right.
That's definitely not how it works. And
yes,
I always have to make people understand that, like, hey, forget what you saw on TikTok, forget what you saw on YouTube. You know, look at this. Look at me right here. Like I've told people on TikTok, hey, when you hear something that's kind of wild, that's too good to be true, see if that person has their LinkedIn up and see what they actually do. Like, absolutely, don't just listen to people that's telling you something, but that's not even the role they do in their profession. Like, like people, like, they kill me with that.
Yeah. And I was just off topic, but I was reading an article the other day about TikTok being the number one platform for misleading information for Gen Z, Generation Z and millennials. And it's part of the reason there's a lot of influencers on TikTok that want to talk about tech and career and whatnot, but not a lot of them may have that experience that you need.
You told people, like, mind you, this dude's like a project manager or something, but he was trying to tell people to get into cybersecurity to go get a CISSP, Google IT support professional, and I think he said AWS cloud practitioner. And I was like, that could be further from the truth, because CISSP is even entry level and you need a certain amount of experience in a couple of the domains before you can even take it. Like, and that's the thing they won't tell
endorsement,
nobody.
Right. You need to get endorsed for that. And if you don't have nobody to endorse it, you're not getting it. So it's like, and that's something that I always struggled with. Even when I started out applying for entry level jobs, I hate that it's still a common problem where they requiring people, some companies, to have a CISSP for entry level security position, just for a SEC analyst. That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. And one of the things I did in my ebook on like showing people how to get into cybersecurity is like, I listed job descriptions and I said, this is entry level. This is an entry level, because one thing LinkedIn does bad is it scrapes the jobs. But if you filter for entry level, the role isn't really entry level. It'll say senior something. And I always tell people, say, hey, look at the day-to-day and then look at the job requirements. Look at the years of experience it's requesting. This is an entry level. Like, it's hard. Like, you know, and then you have technologies like, you know, they'll say, oh, you need 15 experience of the cloud. Like my friend Austin just posted how she said one recruiter was talking about 20 years of experience with Splunk. He was like, what? That doesn't even make sense. How can you have 20 years of experience with Splunk? Like,
you're right. Splunk wasn't even out for 20 years yet.
Right. Like all type of, like, they just be putting crazy stuff on there to gatekeep themselves. But then you'll see that same job open over and over again. Like, it's just a lot of companies, I feel like, that they'll be hired for one thing. And that thing's either open, like they either hire somebody, they don't work out, whatever. So yeah, because y'all don't know how to hire. Y'all are fixated so much on skill set that y'all not focusing on people.
Right.
And that's why a lot of companies have a revolving door, because although skill set is very important, the people that's going to be doing it every day, is going to be working with all these other teams, that's just as important.
Right. I also wanted to point out, just based on my experience when it comes down to the hiring practices for organizations, right? Sometimes they don't, as let's say like you're a manager in the security, as incident response manager, right? You're a SOC lead, right? If certain companies don't allow the managers or the leads to have input on the job description, and HR, to be honest with you, aren't always good at writing job descriptions for getting people required. They go to Google and they look things up and then they make these miraculous, not miraculous, but they set the bar really, really high for certain positions when it really in the case is that shouldn't be the case. So I definitely blame HR in a lot of ways. And hopefully no one who's on the call who is listening to this is in HR, because I don't mean to bash you guys. I love y'all. But when it comes to security requirements, I think that's something that we need to work closely with them to groom the descriptions for entry level positions, mid level, senior level, principal, and so on and so forth.
Right. Yeah, I 100% would agree. And that's why recruiters reach out to me. I'll say, hey, what does the hiring manager want? Like, I looked through the description and I was like, okay, this is a lot of stuff. What do they actually need? Like, I'm not going to waste my time if it doesn't match what I can do.
Exactly. And
what you just said about, you know, entry, mid, senior, principal is another conversation we was having when I've been saying, everybody said, hey, you know, I don't really think the amount of jobs they're saying out here are really out here. I think it's a lot, but not as many as they're saying. Mm-hmm. And what the general consensus has been is that it's not entry level jobs. They don't have enough mid and senior level people. And that's why you see all these openings. And I said, that actually makes sense, because if you mid to seniors, which I tell people, once you get in, you should be fine. Like, it's going to always be somebody, you know, bothering you, you know, to see if you're open on a job market.
Yeah.
Because they don't have those people. Like, everybody's entry right now. So if you're already in, you're good to go. Like, you're going to be ahead of the game for a while.
Right.
Let me see what questions I want to ask you. Let's see. So I think I want to ask you. This is actually a good one. I never asked nobody this. It says, how would your parents describe what you do for a living?
Oh, my goodness. My parents, I'm basically tech support. So,
aren't we all?
right. If I had to tell them if you had to ask them this question, only thing my mom would say was, all I know is that he stops hackers. That's it. And he's into computer stuff. But she won't be able to explain or articulate like what it is that I do. They call me like the tech support. Anytime my mom's having issues, because she works from home, she'll basically call me and she's like, yeah, I don't know how to make this Excel spreadsheet bigger. Can you help me? Or I don't know how to insert data in this Excel spreadsheet. Now, keep in mind, I'm not an Excel professional either. So we both struggling, right? But it's kind of how my parents would describe it, is all you know is he's a computer guy and he stops hackers. That's it. But they don't know that I actually don't. I'm not the first line of defense. I'm not the person who goes in and just like straight blue team. Like, oh yeah, we're triaging these events and we're just going ahead and start not locking things down and containing stuff. I'm more of the person who develops stuff like that. So that's pretty much how they explain it. Man, I wish she was on the show right now, because she basically tell you the exact same thing I'm telling you right now.
Yeah, that my aunt, my grandma. Anything about their computers messing up, they call me. It could be something that I may not know how to do, but I have to go look at it anyway. Since if you do anything with computers in your job, you're like, you know, I equate it to being like a mechanic. You got a mechanic in the family. Hey, my car making a funny noise. Can you look at it? Like, you have to, you know, be knowing everything about every car. Yeah. When you're a mechanic. That's how it is with the computers too. Yeah. That's pretty funny. Dang, I thought I seen one on here that I really wanted to ask you. Oh, here it is. And this will tie back into the cloud stuff, but I feel like that was a funny question to get a little laughter out. What underrated tools are indispensable for your job?
Oh, man. Indispensable tools that are underrated for my job. I would say, honestly... That's a good question, because there's so many tools that I have in my mind right now that I'm thinking about. Mm-hmm.
Top three.
Let me see.
That you definitely need every day. That, you know, that everybody doesn't like even talk about.
If there's anything that I need, I definitely would say Jenkins is one. So Jenkins is a CI/CD tool or software that basically allows people to build pipelines and deploy their code to various different environments. Because I do a lot of development and I do a lot of pipeline designing and work and security as well. If that tool ever goes down, I'm pretty much dead in the water. My entire day is hosed. So I definitely say that's the one tool that is indispensable. The second one is not necessarily a tool, but a service, and that's AWS. If AWS is ever down, I can't do anything, because everything that I do is in AWS. All right. The same thing with, you know, any of the other cloud providers. If they ever go down, right, there's nothing that we could do. So all the services within AWS are pretty much indispensable. And the last thing I would say, the third tool, is Bitbucket or GitHub, GitLab, any SCM tool, source code management tools, to have the ability to be able to write code and check it in. Mm-hmm. That's one thing that will save forest fires from happening. Because if you ever deploy something and let's say that deployment is bad and it's screwing up your application, mm-hmm, to be able to roll back and to, you know, recommit old code or make changes, that's something that I definitely, that gives me the opportunity to be able to do that, to be able to save that code and save multiple versions of it. So without that, I'm pretty sure my job will be merely impossible. I'm not even going to lie.
I'm surprised you didn't say Ansible or Kubernetes.
Ansible. So the reason why Ansible is a configuration management tool, the reason why I didn't say Ansible is because I use CloudFormation.
Okay.
And CloudFormation is,
and that's AWS service, right?
And it's an AWS service, yeah. So AWS, mm-hmm, CloudFormation, and the majority of that is used by spinning up all the resources. I do also use Terraform, and Terraform is actually really cool. Mm-hmm. But it's not necessarily like indispensable tool per se, because if you got CloudFormation, then you don't really need Terraform. Terraform is just kind of a multi-cloud platform or, gotcha, software that you can use to be able to write one template and then deploy that template everywhere else. So okay, it just makes, gotcha, it much easier from a deployment standpoint.
Gotcha. And I threw that in there because if you look at most cloud jobs, or even the security engineering jobs, they're asking you about Kubernetes, Ansible, Jenkins, you know, because Quietus has kept, and a lot of us have been talking about this, like the security space is cool, but they are trying to force see like people who just want to develop, they're trying to make some of them be engineers, which is fine if that's what they want to eventually gravitate to. But it makes it hard on people who aren't that gifted in knowing all the other stuff, but they're very security focused and they know how to do their job very well. They just don't have the other part of that. You know, a lot of them are counted out from roles like that because they want people to do two jobs in one as well.
Yeah, I think because from what I've been reading, there's a shortage of DevSecOps engineers or whatnot, or people who are dev savvy in the security industry. They're trying to convert security professionals into being more dev savvy so they can start managing and configuring their own infrastructure in the cloud with Ansible or whatever software suite they want to use at the company, which I definitely agree with you. It's a very challenging task, you know what I mean? Especially if you don't have a development background. It can definitely be a learning curve because there's so many different tools. Not going to lie. You got Ansible, you got Terraform, you got Jenkins, you have all these different DevOps tools, Chef, K8s, you mentioned Kubernetes, and that is, you know, cluster, deploying Docker containers and cluster management and whatnot. There's a lot of things.
Yeah. And like, so for me, it's like, hey, for this role, just if you hire me, you already know I got the security skills set. I don't have the other stuff, but you know I can do it. Like, if you give me a chance, I can figure it out. I'll stay up all night if I have to. I know that's a lot of people's sentiment when they're telling the people, like, hey, I can do it. You know, that's why they're taking so long to find these people. It's hard to find them.
Yeah.
So why not just say, hey, as long as you got this stuff, we can teach you this sort of stuff. We can put you in training or whatever you need to do. Like, start them off with simple tasks until they get advanced. But for whatever reason, companies aren't trying to do that. And I know it didn't really have to do anything to do with, like you said, the hiring managers, because a lot of them know, hey, we might not find this person that y'all are looking for.
Yeah.
we just might not. We either can go see, it's either one of two ways. You show the security person how to be a dev person, or you show the dev person how to be a security person.
Right. Right. And I think that's something that a lot of these companies are not trying to invest into their talent or the growth of their employees. And the one thing I also see is that they want experts in these technologies. But to be honest, there's only so many of them because they're moving and they're iterating and releasing new features so fast. It's hard to become an expert in Kubernetes. Kubernetes is still a fresh technology. Mm-hmm. And to be honest with you, most companies barely have it implemented. So
no, you're definitely right. That's why I was like, y'all want this stuff, but you know, y'all aren't even there yet infrastructure wise. Come on now.
No. Yeah. And it's the amount of collusion they have in these organizations. Like, you know, cause I firmly believe the main reason why a lot of companies are not advanced in their infrastructure is because of the politics, right? You may have the talent, but the politics is stopping innovation because politics and funding and budget, really. Mm-hmm. Because in order for you to have a nice infrastructure and polish it, you got to have the money to back it up. Most organizations are not willing to. We're barely now getting people to realize the importance of security after so many breaches, after so many compromises, and so just a lot of, you know, things that have happened so far. So just imagine now having to allocate more funding to be able to implement, you know, like K8s and all that stuff like that and secure it.
So. Yeah, man, I definitely agree. This might be the last question off this particular list. But what is one piece of advice you give to someone starting out in your career? So we'll probably say if somebody wants to do cloud, we'll do that one. We'll make that one a little bit easier and say that.
Okay. So if someone wanted to just get in the cloud, the first recommendation is find a service that fit that you want. First, identify the service that you want to go into and only focus on that one. Learn that one really, really well. Or enough for you to be able to get a job or get employed. So in my case, I always recommend people to get started in AWS. And the reason why is because AWS, it has the majority of the market share. Everyone is using it. If you want to go into GCP, then by all means, feel free to do that. But you may have a harder time getting a job with GCP or knowing GCP than you would with AWS. So you start with that one cloud provider that you've identified, get a certificate, associate level certification, whether it's an AWS Solutions Architect, or I think Azure has one where pretty much I'm all AWS over here. So I don't really know the Azure certifications, but right. Get a technical certification in that arena and start doing projects. Writing about what you're learning. Put yourself out there, put it on LinkedIn, put it on Twitter, put it on YouTube, make a YouTube video. You can have a Twitch series and invite people and say, hey, look, it's an 2 hours, 2 hours every Saturday. I'm going to be building infrastructure in AWS. And while you're doing it and you're learning, you probably got two or three or maybe a collection of people in that same room with you and that same live stream learning right along with you. Right. And that's your experience. Believe it or not, that is your experience. You don't necessarily have to say that you working in an enterprise environment's experience when you are developing and, you know, spinning up infrastructure and, you know, creating resources in AWS or whatever cloud provider you're using to claim that as experience. Once it's documented and it's put out there and you're writing articles and publishing blog posts about what you're learning, that's experience. And that's how you get started. Just put yourself out there. Do it. Write about it. Let people know what you're doing and put it out there and get certified.
Good answer. It's funny enough that you said, you know, start doing projects. Because I just was telling people in my last episode I uploaded today was that, like, a lot of you guys either want me to do your resume or, you know, you're not successful in your jobs because, hey, you ain't did any projects. You know, your resume, you want to do like a role in cloud or you will say like SOC or IR, but you have no type of security related projects on your resume. Right. You're not able to show the interviewer that you really understand what you're interviewing for or, you know, what you did on your own to showcase your ability to be able to do the job.
Right.
So if you can do that, you know, you do like you said, a lot of reading and research and then you're doing your projects, you could probably come up with a solution that some company is facing. You know, if they ask you something in an interview, you say, oh, well, you know, I deploy this, this, and this in my home lab for, you know, this purpose right here. You know, I think something like that could help you out with, you know, your issues. And that's also one of the questions I tell people, say, hey, what current problems are you facing? So that way you can probably speak on how you would address that problem or what solution do you know that will fix it. So I definitely agree with you telling people of the lab. And like we said, with the cloud, it's even easier. And the thing I do like about cloud certifications over the other certifications, like if we were talking like from a security route or something like that, is most of them pretty much ask you like kind of bare basic stuff kind of in a sense when you're starting out. But a lot of the guides for these certs come with labs, so you can kind of understand the material as you're learning it. And then, like we said, you'll start maybe figuring out an area that you want to specialize in when it comes to AWS or Azure, GCP, or anybody else that's, yes, you know, that we didn't name that has some type of cloud presence. And it'll help you out too, because a lot of companies got their own proprietary clouds that they, you know, have, but they're eventually going to use one of the other three providers that we just talked about.
Right.
So being a person that knows that is fine. Like, you know, don't get down now if you're not where you want to be at when it comes to like maybe your future cloud career, because believe me, you're probably farther than a lot of people you know that's been working for years that don't really know anything about the cloud. They never, you know, logged into the AWS management console.
Yeah, that's true. That is very true. I mean, to be honest with you, there are very few cloud experts because there's so many new services that are being developed every day, especially in AWS. It's hard to keep up. So as I always say, no matter where you are, you know, I have, what, 4 AWS certifications and I'm still learning. I'm still a student to the game every day. And there's still a lot that I don't know. I just know how to get things working, you know,
and that's one just of the best skills to have, though.
Yeah, right. Just get it working. That's really all you need to do is just get it working. And if you have a solution, no matter whether it's unoptimal or whatnot, a solution is a solution. So, you know, optimization takes place after you've implemented it and actually seen the problems that you may have in the future.
Yeah, man. You know, go to lab every day, like the one life is.
Exactly. Yeah.
But I'm going to go back into some stuff that you said earlier in the conversation when you said, hey, you got into technology because you like video games. So now I'm going to put you on the spot and ask you, I got a feeling I know what you may say for your video games, but we're going to say, like, what's your favorite video game or games? And then, like, either are you a console guy or you're a PC guy? Like, you know, what's that?
So I was a PC guy for a while, and then I got a PS5, so then I converted part-time. But my favorite games, I would have to say, in that order, is I'm taking it back all the way to the early 2000s, because the GameCube and the PS2 are legendary systems.
Don't leave out the Dreamcast, no.
And you know what? I can't leave out the Dreamcast, but I never owned one. Gotcha. So I don't necessarily know any video games except for Sonic Adventure. But
I can tell you some.
Yeah. Need for Speed Underground is one. That's always going to be Need for Speed Underground and Need for Speed Most Wanted 2005. Those are my two most favorite games. And for the PS2, I always got to put this in, but GTA San Andreas will always have a place in my house, because that was the first game where we actually get to play with a black character in an open world. And it was actually like it hit on a lot of our struggles, you know, and things that we do today or back then, you know, and gang life and all that stuff like that. But yeah, those are my favorite games and stuff like that.
Man, let me see. If I go to Dreamcast, I was about 9. My cousins were like 18 or 19 at the time, 20s. So we're playing Dreamcast. So this is when I'm playing, of course, Sonic. That's a game called Power Stone, Jet Set Power Radio Stone. Future.
Yeah.
What else they had? Knights wasn't on there. Knights was like a Sega Saturn game.
Jet Set Radio is legendary.
Right. And it's another game. Oh, Crazy Taxi. Crazy Taxi, man. I got that now because, like, so I'm an Xbox guy. I got the Xbox Series X over there. So, you know, Xbox inherited, and you got a lot of those Dreamcast games on here now. So I actually had Crazy Taxi. Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was going to ask, did they remaster it? Because I remember Crazy Taxi, for sure. They had like a couple of versions, like on some of the like older consoles, like PS2 and stuff like that. You could buy it. But did they ever remaster it for Xbox? Like make the graphics all nice and pretty? Oh, really?
I think they did a little bit of it. Not like a full remaster, but it's decent. But I started playing Super Nintendo. That was my mom. That was my first system I played. It was my mom. She used to be a gamer. So, granted, I've slacked off in these last couple of years because I didn't have time to play. But Zelda always had a special place in my heart, especially Link to the Past, Ocarina of Time, Wind Waker, Minish Cap, and Twilight Princess, for sure. And I had to go back and beat Majora's Mask. I think, like, one of my, like, and this is an inside scoop for the listeners, like, another one of my channels is going to be, like, me, like, either on Twitch or just using Streamlabs or OBS and playing, like, through these old games or something like Majora's Mask and just, like, me talking through it and my reaction to some of the stuff. Like, so that's some of the things I plan to do because I never did beat it. And then if I move on to PlayStation, Spyro, Crash Bandicoot, I didn't really care. Like, I played Tekken, but I didn't really care for Tekken that much. I played, like, so many different games on, like, PlayStation, like Rayman. It's so many I played on them. But then if I get into GameCube, of course, Super Smash Brothers.
Yes.
Mario Sunshine, Star Fox Adventures, Bloody Roar. Tied the Tasmanian Tiger. That's like some of like my favorite games that like I played throughout like growing up. I had like one of them Need for Speeds on the GameCube too. That was pretty fun. I can't remember which one it was. Also my wrestling games. This is what on PlayStation. So SmackDown. And then I had Day of Reckoning on my GameCube. I tried to get into Phantasy Star Online back then. Like my homeboy let me hold it. I wasn't really understanding what was going on. But but then, like, now I'll skip to like what I always go back and replay all the time. I always go back and replay my favorite Saints Row, which is Saints Row 2.
Not 2.
Yeah, 2 is the better one because 2 has a good story. one and two are the best ones. Three is cool graphics wise, but
the story is horrible.
It's better than four. Like four is trash.
I stopped playing after three. I
did too.
I didn't touch it.
I think I bought four on a whim just because I was bored. I didn't think about touching this last one because it was stupid.
I made the mistake of buying the last one, to be honest, and I played it and it was horrible, man. I wouldn't even advise anybody to get the game because the story is just it's trash.
I don't know why they moved away from like Johnny Gat and whatever his name is, and then you got Pierce and Shondi. I don't know why they moved away from that. That's just me. They had something that's worked and they messed it up. But one of my favorite games that I play over and over again, probably once to every 2 to 3 years, is Sleeping Dogs. Sleeping Dogs is one of my favorite games. Yeah.
For real, dude, I owned that game when I had the PS3, and it is, the story is so captivating.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, back then there was rumors that Sleeping Dogs was actually supposed to be, and I don't know if you remember this, but the true crime spinoff. So, you know, True Crime Streets of LA and True Crime New York City. Mm-hmm. I had both of them, loved them, but it was supposed to be THQ was supposed to develop another true crime and base it in Hong Kong, but turned out to be Sleeping Dogs.
Right. So, yeah, it was, man, I love the game.
It's really good.
And like every time I play it, I get mad because I go back in and I look up like, fam, like, where's number two at? Like, you can't give us this cliffhanger. Like, so I'm like, they need to do something. They tried to, and they did, I think, Triad Wars or something they could do. But like, no, we want Sleeping Dogs too. Like, yes. I don't know who I need to ask. Like, I might reach out to Bill Gates or somebody, see if they could put the money up. Because I think that's one of the things too. They went off solely off, I guess, the sales when it first came out. But if they like go back and look, it's like probably one of the most replayable games that you can have anybody. Oh, and recently,
a lot of streamers.
The last series that I actually like, now surprised that I liked, and it's because I got Xbox Game Pass. The reason why I keep an Xbox, because Game Pass lets me play like a lot of games I didn't play before and when I have time to sit down. The reason why I don't play games a lot now is because they take away so much productivity, but it'd be so much fun. But I spent like probably a fourth or a quarter of like maybe, what was it, like late 2021 to 2022 playing Yakuza.
Okay, all right. Now we're talking, because I actually want to get into. I was going to purchase the latest one that they have for
something like a dragon.
It's called Like a Dragon. Yeah, Like a Dragon.
Not playing that one. That's not the same character.
It's not the same. So, do you consider like which ones were your favorite? Was it the first and second one? Well, don't they have like four of them?
They got a lot. I played Yakuza. Was it? 3, 4, 5, 6. I think it's like six of them. It's a lot. It's like one in the beginning, Yakuza 1 point something, and then they redid them. But I was playing it because it was, to me, it's kind of like an anime. I was getting like the characters, and you start seeing certain kids grow up. Oh, this couldn't happen to, you know, the dragon, you know, or Dojima, like, you know, so. It's definitely pretty cool like that. Oh, and last one, I said, see, that's why I got it. Like, I'll ramble on. And that's why I'm probably going to start doing live streams, because this would be interesting to people in the chat will be listening. It's like, I'm ready for the game with the four horsemen, Darksiders. Darksiders, that's what it's called. Darksiders. I love Darksiders.
I haven't heard of it. I need to look that up, because that actually sounds really interesting.
They got Darksiders 1, 2, and 3. But the kicker is that Darksiders 1 is really after Darksiders 2. And then Darksiders 2 is happening while Darksiders 3 is happening. Like, it's like the story, you know, whatever. But it's all about like the apocalypse and when the seals break and the angels and all these
interesting.
Different. Like, it's pretty good. I got a good little lore behind it. You'll like it. Like, good voice acting. It reminds me of, if I was going to say, like, Darksiders 2 is probably like my favorite one. I stopped playing number one because of something's going on with the sound. It wasn't working right, but I already know it happened to the story. But it gives me Legend of Zelda meets Prince of Persia to me, based on like fighting, having to like sometimes you find some stuff to level up your weapons or whatever, and side quests, and then the puzzles and the dungeons that you got to do, and then when you have to fight the main people. With the, but the, yeah, the main fights are a little harder than like the Legend of Zelda fights. All you gotta do is figure out the pattern in Zelda and hope that you don't die. The only time a fight was hard and Zelda was freaking a little bit was Ganondorf on Ocarina of Time, because they kept on cheating when he would throw the thing back. You had to hit thing, it back and
yeah,
forth.
So yeah, I know what you're talking about. I was gonna follow up on the apocalyptic game that you were talking about. Mm-hmm. So if you like those type of games, The Last of Us, I don't know if you've heard of it. It's a PlayStation exclusive. Chef's kiss. It's really, really good. I will say, if you, because I just bought it like 2 weeks ago, and I dumped 40 hours into it accidentally because of the story, but it's really mm-hmm. worth the play. It's a good
reason why I don't buy good games. and we're gonna close out on this, guys. There's supposed to be another Splinter Cell coming out, so I can't wait for that. And we're gonna let Damien give us some ending words.
No matter what, always put your best foot first, and always keep your head in the game, and don't forget to take breaks, because in the end, organizations will always, I'll say this, if something happens to you, and let's say if you're experiencing burning out, because I see burning out is like the trending topic on social media right now, mm-hmm. when you need to take a break, take a break. That job will always be there. The queue is always going to be there. Work will always be there waiting for you. Take the break when you need it. And just continue to be great people. Continue to be awesome. We're all humans. We all have strengths and weaknesses. Play to your strengths and work on your weaknesses. And that's all I have to say. Y'all stay blessed.
Appreciate that, man. Appreciate y'all for rocking with us, man. You know, I'm going to leave y'all with this. You know, actually, matter of fact, on the next episode after this one that's dropped, the first person to tell me what's the last rule in the rule book will get something special from me. So if you can tell me what's the last rule of the rule book and you know where that's from, make sure you comment on a post or whatever, and I'm remembering, I'm going to get you something. But appreciate all the listeners. Appreciate the people that's supporting on YouTube. Share this out if you found it interesting. If you like video games, you can connect with us on, I'll probably drop our gamer tags in the description. But yeah, man, it's been another episode of Textual Talk. I appreciate everybody. And until next time, let's stay textual. We out.